Miami Memoirs presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of Florida attorney Lewis M. Ress. Miami Memoirs uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful, and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. From multi-million-dollar land deals to the ghostly aftermath of an Everglades plane disaster via a prematurely deep-frozen cat, these tales feature a parade of unforgettable characters, all sharply observed by a storyteller with a very human empathy for ordinary and extraordinary individuals caught up in the law.
Lewis has just released a new book, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Fans of strange cases and wild tales will need no introduction to the author's brilliant and fast-paced storytelling, laced with salty evocations of the human carnival of the era and shot through with compassionate insight. From advising the heir to Colonel Sanders and falling out with Buddy Hackett to nighttime jogging with Vitas Gerulaitis, the stories keep on coming. Larry the charismatic wheeler dealer needs to be rescued from yet another risky deal, and a bridge-playing mobster needs help to find his missing daughter. All this and more, along with sage advice against buying a lottery ticket you might win. Welcome to round two. And now, let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Lewis Ress. I'm your host, Jeanette Garcia, and today we're on episode 49, Envoy Candles. So, what does this mean, Lewis? Envoy Candles.
Envoy means a short closing paragraph or statement.
Okay.
That's what it means.
Huh.
And I entitled these four little stories Envoy because they're about all these people are dead. And it's about the lives and how they died.
Okay.
So, I cannot name a religion or a nation or a tribe, culture, or people or cult that does not have death observances. Most of them light candles. Candles are on little plates, lined up on racks, suspended from the ceiling, placed on brackets in the wall, encased in bottles, displayed in empty water glasses with prayer labels stuck on. The candles are tall. Sometimes they're short. Sometimes they're skinny. Sometimes they're fat. Some with incense. They are usually lit with a taper, which in turn is lit by a match, accompanied by chanting, often in languages not understood by the participants. But we do it, and we continue to do it. It's a part of our life.
That's part of most cultures and religions, right? Lighting candles as a form of memorial.
Right. I'm sick and tired of the wasteland and old Danny boy and being depressed and death. Except candles are usually yellow, and that's a happy color.
All right. So you mentioned you were going to go through some candles that were lit in memory of some individuals, right?
Yeah, right. Well, we spend too much time moaning and groaning and mourning and wearing black or white, depending on your... some people wear black for mourning, and others in the Asian countries wear white.
Or
South America. In Argentina, I think they wear white.
Oh, I see.
So the first one is called A Candle for George. And George Case was my law partner and best friend. And it's a remembrance.
Tell us about it.
Well, George Case was dying, and I didn't know about it until later. It was just before his 90th birthday party, and I had recently spoken with him. I said, "George, do you remember when you had that briefcase full of $100 bills all in bank wrappers, and you were going to Jacksonville to pay off the governor's man?" He said, "Lewis, I don't know what you're talking about. I never did anything like that."
And did he really do something like that?
Yep, he did. "George, do you remember when I got that courtesy phone call telling me to advise you that unless you stopped firing and rehired those casino workers, you would be walking on the bottom of the Gulf Stream in concrete shoes?"
Oh, I remember this guy, yeah.
He said, "Lewis, that never happened. You never said anything like that to me. George, I flew over to Freeport, and I was your guest in your home for the weekend. On Sunday, just before I left, we had a walk around your pool, and you asked why I had invited myself over. And I told you then and there the message that I was asked to deliver. And you rehired those young Italian men, and that was the end of it."
Louis, that really happened too?
No. He said, Louis, that never happened, but it did. The last time I spoke to George was on his 90th birthday, and I told him that I loved him, and he told me the same, that he loved me, and he died the next day.
Oh, wow. Yeah. At least you expressed how much you cared about each other, right?
Yeah, we were best friends.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, and that was George's death. He was dying, and I didn't know it.
Wow.
He had been in
came as a shock.
Hospice. He had come out of hospice for his birthday party. I wasn't aware of it.
Oh, wow.
And the next one is called A Candle for Marcella.
And who's Marcella?
Well, she was a real larger-than-life character. All these people are in these stories. They're larger than life. She said her motto was, "You call, I come." Marcella's Italian restaurant advertised that in the movie houses. Way back in the 60s, she had home delivery in the early days. The pasta was excellent and the pizza was terrific. And she was a jolly middle-aged woman, single, who liked young Italian men. She had three restaurants, all in the North Miami area, and somehow I became her attorney. I don't remember what we did for her, but I do know that I knew her and I liked her. But we may have pulled her out of some financial trouble when her line of frozen foods didn't make it.
And that happens to many successful individuals, and they expand and then they go bust, right?
Yeah, frozen food is a whole different business. Sometimes if you have one restaurant that works, you ought to stick with it and not try opening a chain.
Try to expand.
It's a good way to go under.
Yep.
You can't look after the money and the cash and the bills and the labor and keep the restaurants running. One is tough enough.
Right, yeah.
But she knew the restaurant business. And she had opened up a brand new Italian restaurant in Freeport in the Bahamas.
Wow, nice.
She was doing very well, but she was buying motorcycles and other toys for her young lover.
Oh.
And she was treating him to clothes and spending gobs of money on him.
Oh, no.
She just couldn't help herself. She fell short of cash, and she stopped paying the licensing fee to Grand Bahama Enterprises. She was 6 months behind.
And what happened?
Jerry Capps, the company regulator, shut her down. They padlocked her restaurant and took away her license. She cried and she begged. She offered an extended payout plan, but there was no forgiveness. She was out, O-U-T, out.
And what could Marcella do in this case?
Well, she called. She called me and she came to the office, and she was dressed like a village folk dancer with two big black braids down her back and with knee socks and short pants and suspenders. And big gold earrings and lots of lipstick. And she said, "Mr. S., can you help me? I'm out of business. They won't give me a second chance. I could make double payments and catch up, but that Jerry Capps won't even talk to me."
Well, it sounds bad. What'd you do?
I was going over to Freeport anyhow on business in a few days, so I promised to talk to Jerry Capps and see what I could do.
And didn't you represent the governor of Freeport? As well?
Oh, yeah. I represented the whole government there. My partner was president of the company that owned the government, Grand Bahama Island Enterprises. That's not the real name, but it's close enough. My relationships at Grand Bahama Enterprises were indeed cordial. My former partner and best friend, George Case, was the president, and he ran the place. Marcella's restaurant had a prime location in the mall, and I couldn't understand why the company wouldn't reinstate Marcella. Jerry Capps was on the second floor. I went to see him. He knew just why I was dropping by, and he wasn't thrilled to see me.
How did it go?
It didn't go so well. I went to his office, and I said, "Jerry, Marcella asked me to speak to you and see if you would be kind enough to give her another chance. She could pay 2 months down and make double payments until she catches up."
And how do you react to that?
He was agitated. He was angry. He said, "I'm sorry, but there is no way we're going to reinstate Marcella. She missed 6 months, and did not respond to my letters, and she's done. It's over with her. There's no compromising or discussing it. It's over. Over. Please don't ever ask again. Marcella will not be reinstated. Never."
Wow.
No, never.
He really got worked up, huh?
Yeah, he was angry and he was subjectively involved. He did not like Marcella, and there was nothing I could do or say to get him to change his mind. So my next stop was to visit my former partner, George Case, for lunch and discuss some real estate matters.
How'd it go? How did lunch go?
Oh, George was as friendly as ever. He's a wonderful guy, and it was always good to be with him. He was a Kiwanis type of fellow, always positive, always looking at the bright side of things, and very, very smart.
Sounds like a great guy, yeah.
George said, Louis, you look a little down. What's on your mind? I said, George, I told Marcella that I would try to get her license reinstated, and I just spoke to Jerry, who was very negative. He said no. Marcella says she can make double payments until she's up to date. Louis, I think you might want to reconsider Jerry. You may have misunderstood him. Why don't you drop in on him after lunch before you leave town? So I dropped in on Jerry on the way out. He said, Louis, I don't know where you got the idea that we wouldn't give Marcella another chance. You just have to send over the double payment and pick up the balance as she goes along. She can reopen tonight. It's always so good to see you.
It's amazing how Jerry changed his mind, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know he got a phone call.
Yeah.
So Marcella was crying when she got the news. She says, Mr. S., thank you. I pay you whatever you want. I love you.
Did you get free food for life after that?
I said, Marcella, there's no charge. I was going to Freeport anyway, and it just took me a few minutes with Jerry. Mr. S., I make for you a nice dinner, and you bring her your friends.
Oh, that's nice. Were you thinking maybe you and your wife?
Well, I thought she meant, you know, maybe bring another couple and my wife and I.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that Marcella had in mind. She owned a gourmet Italian restaurant called Ma Cocina, and it was ours for the night. We had over 100 dinner guests. There were so many courses, I stopped counting. The wines flowed. There was an illegal, huge, ice-encased snook fish.
Wow.
And the judges said it was the best dinner they ever had.
Wow.
I invited a lot of the judges.
It's a great story. And so whatever happened to Marcella?
Well, Marcella kept getting involved with younger men, and she paid the price. The last I heard, she was living on the northwest coast of the United States, either in Oregon or Washington. She was out of money and out of luck. I hadn't heard from her in many years, and then I learned that she died. She died from lust.
Ugh, yeah. Yeah, she had that going for her. So tell us about the next one. Who's up?
The
here
next
we go.
One,
larger than life personality, huh?
The next one is an envoy. Light a candle for George Hamway. Did you know that there were a large number of Christians living in Syria?
No.
Well, they don't look or sound any different from any other Syrians, but they are persecuted.
Mm.
George Hamway was one of the smart ones who got out and came to the real Holy Land, the United States, the USA. His original name may not have been Hamway. After all, that's pretty anglicized American name.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to suit him. He never told me how he came to own two sport fishing party boats, the Popeye and the Also. He already owned them when George Case introduced us. He was a friend and a client of mm-hmm. George Case.
And how is Captain Hamway doing? Is he alive?
No. Captain Hamway's gone. Mm. He was a ball of fire. He was all of 5 feet tall, squat, and powerful. He looked Middle Eastern. He had brown skin, black hair, and flashing white teeth. His nickname was Shorty. Actually, I did know that he built both of those boats. They were over 100 feet long. They were made of wood, and they were made for party boat fishing. He had them docked at Hall Over Cut, right next door to the channel to the ocean, right here in Miami.
Mm. And did you ever go fishing on the boats?
Oh, yeah. George Case had taken me out fishing after work and sometimes instead of work. And we caught a mittful of kingfish, and they cut a mark on the head of the fish. They number it, a number for each fisherman, so that you could identify your fish when they were tossed onto the dock. People would come to see the boats return and offer to buy your fish.
Hmm. So what's the story about Captain Hamway?
Well, he was a bachelor, mm-hmm. and he had a girlfriend, Prudy, but that didn't mean he wouldn't fool around. He invited me to have dinner with him at 6 at his home in Surfside, and it was going to be Chinese food from takeout containers. In the meantime, my secretary had been after me to return a call from a lady who had been married to a wheelchair-bound attorney. He had recently died, and I barely knew him. She probably wanted financial help, money, and my secretary insisted that I meet with her and arrange for her to come into the office at 5 that evening.
So what happened?
Well, much to my surprise, a very compact, cheery, lusty lady in her late 30s appeared. Well-dressed, nice brown hair, clean-looking face, and she looked at me.
Oh, here it comes. A plea for money, huh?
Oh, she said, I believe you knew my husband. It was starting. Yep, you were right. Ma'am, allow me to offer to help you a little bit. And she stopped me. She said, no, I didn't come to you for a handout. I want to earn some money to help support my children. They are in high school and it's expensive. I'm a hooker and I charge $50. Oh. Oh. Can you help me get some business? It would really help me.
What a surprise. Wow, I can't believe it.
Yeah, so I picked up the phone. And I called George Hamway. I said, George, I'm bringing dessert. It's a surprise dessert. Dress nicely. Click. That was the end of the phone call.
And what happened next?
She had her own car, and I gave her directions. And it wasn't far from her townhouse, Captain Hamway's house. And I wound up sitting on the sofa in Captain Hamway's living room waiting for them to finish up.
Oh, boy. How awkward.
And the voice came down from upstairs. Hey, Lewis, would you mind bringing us up a couple of scotches? And I became the waiter. Upstairs, I went with 2 scotch and sodas. Shorty went to the bathroom, and I handed Alicia her drink. She said, thank you so very much for looking after me. You know, you are very nice and cute, too.
Oh, boy.
She was naked, and she had large breasts, quite large. In fact, a lovely, voluptuous body. And I was sitting at the edge of the bed just south of her. She raised her leg and put it on my shoulder. She had no clothes on. When I looked at her, I was looking straight between her legs. She wasn't stupid. She said, this one is on the house.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
Wild. Pretty risque.
Yeah, it was amazing. I didn't have to think twice. You know, I'm a lawyer. It just came to me. I said, thank you. What a kind gesture. Sorry, I'm just not up to it.
Oh, my gosh. What a response.
The 3 of us ate Chinese food. And Shorty was happy, and a week later, I got a call from him, from Captain Hemway. He says, you dog, drippy dick, I got it from her.
Oh, my gosh.
He had venereal disease.
Oh,
then
that's terrible.
I received a greeting card from the captain. It was an x-ray of a penis with a bony spine in the penis and all the bones fractured.
Oh, my God.
And it read, I've got a broken bone. I don't think it contributed to his death, however.
Oh, my gosh, what a story.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so here we go. Now we have Ray Good. So
let's
hear about it.
This is a unbelievable story. It's a very sensitive from being ribald, talking about lust and sex, to a very, very sensitive story, a delicate story, a religious story, and a serious story. And you don't hear me talk about things like that too often.
No.
This is a candle for Ray Good. Ray's dead, you're right. This is about his first wife, Ellie. She was a wonderful person, wonderful in the sense that she was exceptionally kind, sensitive, and gentle for a fairly large woman. She was unusually good, good through and through. Her name was even Good. She woke up one morning with a sore throat, and it was cancer. She was in and out of the hospital a few times. It didn't take long, and then she was sent home to die.
Oh, that's so sad.
Ray and Ellie were our close, close friends. He was an OBGYN doctor with a small office attached to our family doctor's suite. He helped us solve the difficulty we were having in getting pregnant. He operated on my wife, and wow.
Was it a successful operation?
Yeah, you know, she was wonderful after that. He delivered both of our boys. And he wound up with 2 heart attacks, and he retrained as a psychiatrist.
Oh, wow.
The Goods were like gypsies. They moved almost every year. This time they were living in Key Biscayne, and Ellie only had a few days left. Ray invited us to a last dinner at their apartment, and he barbecued. There were 2 huge porterhouse steaks and a bottle of wine. The label on the bottle of wine was handwritten, and it had a handwritten number on it. There was no picture of a winery. It was an unusual bottle. And Ray decanted the wine, and while it was in the decanter, he poured it in. we went for a walk, and my wife was saying goodbye to her dear friend as we were walking. When we returned, Ray poured a glass of the wine, and it wasn't wine, it was ambrosia.
Mm.
I said, "Ray, this is like tasting liquid platinum." Ray said, "Louis, do you remember when your son Andrew was born, our first son? You bought me a gift. It was a wine encyclopedia, a wine rack, and 12 bottles of wine. This is the 12th bottle."
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Well, that's the best wine story I've ever heard.
So, you want to...
Oh, there's definitely meaning in each of these.
Talk to you about these different envoys.
Yes, please. Want to hear
first
it.
One, well, there are, I'm going to summarize it first, and then I'll talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, George Cates, that was really about success and denial.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny about denial, how what people, you know, I didn't do that. That never happened.
Yes.
And the second one, Marcella, is about lust.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about male lust, but there's female lust.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be devastating. The women fall for a guy and they go crazy and they do stupid things. The third one was Captain Hamway. We're trying to be nice and bring him a treat backfire that caused him to have a disease. And the last one is a very sensitive religious story. And it's a wine story, the best wine story I ever heard in my life. But this is about things come around in a circle and we bring in life. And here's a gift for helping us have children and bringing in life.
Mm.
And the gift is used to celebrate his wife's death. So it's a full circle of life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more to the story. It's really a meaningful story.
Very powerful.
So
yeah,
I'll talk one at a time. George Cates. So you know what that's about. Deny, 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 deny. You know, that's the politicians.
Uh-huh.
And politicians never admit anything. They say it's untrue, it never happened, it's a vicious lie by jealous people.
Mm-hmm.
You get Kevin McCarthy now, the minority leader in the House. They said that he asked former President Trump to resign because of the January 6th riots.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's denying that he ever said that. They have tape of him. He says the tape's not accurate. That's not what he
really
meant.
Okay.
You know, politicians, they claim credit for anything positive. You know, peace in our time, whatever, rise in living standards, drop in crime, reduction in that number of accidents, increase in life expectancy, cure of diseases. They claim credit for that. And they blame others for anything negative, inflation, illness, pollution.
Yeah.
They double down. They double down. So now they have, and they have spokespeople too. And they say, oh, they're not lying. There are alternate facts. And they don't lie. They misspeak themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I never said that. And even if they have pictures or recordings, they deny it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, for example, the big lie. I won in a landslide.
Right.
And here's a guy, former President Trump, who was a birther. He was one of the first ones to say that former President Obama was not born in the United States.
Yep, yep.
And he demanded the birth certificate. And then when he got the birth certificate, he said it was forged. Then they have, you know, drain the swamp and lock her up and all mm-hmm. those stuff. And that stuff has an effect. People remember those slogans.
They do.
They say, my opponent is a... a sexologist or a sextogenarian. A sextogenarian means he's 60 years old.
Right.
So another one is Boris Johnson lately. I was thinking about that. Boris Johnson has a shift to shift a news agenda. He made a strategic lying to make an issue in the forefront that really is in the back, to bring it to the forefront, to make that the issue that you run on.
Right.
So he brought up the issue. He said, we send to the European Union 350 million pounds a week. And they put that on the side of a big bus. And they stopped sending our money to Europe. We're giving them our money. And that was, he got the people to vote for him as prime minister on this lie. They never were sending 350 million pounds a week to Europe. It was just a lie.
Right.
Straight up bald-faced lie.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course,
it caught on.
Yeah, his advisor, Dominic Cummins, was the one who coached him on that. And they had that on the side of a bus. They drove the bus all around England, you know.
Yeah, a bunch of people saw it.
Bus. No, it was a lie. So, you know, they don't, if they have a debate, they don't want fact-checking. The Republicans don't want to have any more debates now, because I was talking about debates the other day, I think.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have debates because they don't want to have fact-checking. They say lying is just fine. It's a different reality. It's a different reality. And then they call you a groomer and a pedophile, no matter what.
Now, yeah, that's what they go to.
It's a nice day, they say, that's just typical of a pedophile.
Right, yeah.
And that sticks to you. It's a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm. It's true, yeah.
So that's what's going on. That's the first one. Okay, the second one, Marcella. Marcella. Lust, a good way to damage yourself. The Bible says sin leads to hell. So what about women's lust? Do they have it? Sure. Women have terrible lusts, and they get involved romantically. Their lusts are more romantic than men. But some of them are physical, sexual, but most of them are emotional. And they get, they'll kill for a guy. They'll murder. They'll cheat, steal, do anything, run away, kill their children, anything. Marcella was a good example of lust damaging somebody severely. What else? Well, let's talk about the most lustful woman I could think of, Cleopatra.
Cleopatra, okay.
Well, nobody knows anything about Cleopatra. They think they do, but they don't. Everyone thinks that Cleopatra was Egyptian, but she wasn't. I think she was either Greek, Nubian, you know, or came from Iran. Which was Mesopotamia, I think, or it was a different part of the world. And she came to Egypt, and I think she killed her son, who was a threat to her, and her sister, who was a threat to her. She had them killed to ascend to the to be pharaoh of Egypt. And then, of course, she was involved with Caesar. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I didn't. I've looked it up. She lived in Rome before she met Mark Antony. She lived in Rome, and she had children. And she was the fashion plate of Rome. People did style their hair the way she did and wore her clothes and everything. And then she went back to Egypt. And she got involved with Mark Antony,
right?
And she lusted for him, and she had more children. I think she had like three kids.
Oh, and, wow!
Yeah, so she, you know, couldn't be that, you know, pristine a woman. She wasn't a child.
Yeah.
And then the question of whether she committed suicide, because they said, well, she. Oh, she came down the Nile when she met Mark Antony on a golden barge. She knew how to present
herself. Make an entrance.
Yeah, she made an entrance. And she spoke maybe 15 languages.
Wow.
She was educated in math and philosophy and astrology. She was some lady. And she wound up, they said, well, she put an asp on her arm and the asp bit her.
Right.
But if you read and dig enough, you'll find that that may not have been the case at all. She may have taken a drug, which is more than likely.
So she took a drug and then it just
Yeah, and then died from the drug, you know. So who else? Multiple marriages. Who was a woman in the United States who had many marriages?
Elizabeth Taylor.
Right, Elizabeth Taylor. You know your stuff. I was amazed. That's right. She had multiple marriages.
Yep.
And she didn't believe in sexual freedom. She said, if you want to go to bed with me, you marry me.
Mm.
And that was it. And these guys were full of lust and they married her.
They're like, okay.
She was married to everybody. No. Anyhow, that's the story of lust.
Well, you know, I mean, she got married, so.
you had the story of George Case,
mm-hmm.
and now we're down to Captain Hamway, which, you know, is no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, well, there's lust there, too.
Poor George. I don't think he ever really forgave me.
It's a tough one.
And,
it's
a tough one. That brings you to Ibsen, you know, Enemy of the People, which we've talked about. But I haven't talked to you about poor Dr. Fauci.
Mm.
Poor Dr. Fauci.
Mm.
He makes a lot of money, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think he makes $500,000 a year salary, and then Ooh. He makes more money. And he's worth $10 million.
Wow.
And he gets it good from all sides.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to prevent disease with vaccination, and they go after him personally. Senator Rand Paul, he attacked him. And he's an anti-vax senator. So he's collecting money. He has a website where you go after Fauci on behalf of Senator Rand Paul, and then you send Rand Paul money. You check off the box. So we talk about Fauci making money. Rand Paul did it as a fundraiser. He shut up now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear about Rand Paul anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He quieted down after they caught him raising money for his own pockets at Fauci's expense. So long history of vaccinations, and every time people got the business. Edward Jenner did cowpox, you know, he did smallpox vaccinations. And then there was measles and tetanus and diphtheria and anthrax and cholera, plague, typhoid, tuberculosis, whooping cough, chickenpox, rabies. Louis Pasteur did rabies. And they all paid a price. Nobody said thank you.
Yeah.
That's the story of Captain Hamway. And, of course, I had the same thing with the Aetna when I tried to help this woman get $2,000 that the case had expired.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge wanted to have me disbarred.
Right.
It
all went down south.
You try to be nice and you get punished. Okay. We're up to the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is a very short story and highly symbolic. First of all, it's a gift for helping create a life I gave to Ray Good.
Mm-hmm.
And but for his operating on my wife, I wouldn't have had children. So what is the gift? Well, the gift was wine.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the story of wine? Well, do you know the sacrament at all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wine is Christ's blood.
Mm-hmm.
And you drink of the blood of the wine and during the service, and the bread is his body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not Christian, but I know it. I mean, I've represented the Catholic Church for 15 years, so
right.
I know a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you receive the sacrament, it symbolizes the joy and the resurgence of life and the resurrection. With the forgiveness of sins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Easter is. And it's really I think it's the most religious holiday in the history of the church.
Yeah.
And a very serious, serious holiday. So we also, with Ray, we were having dinner there and we were celebrating the final meal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a symbolic thing also,
mm-hmm.
which is the final meal was a remembrance. So what's the final meal?
The last
Christianity.
Supper. The Last Supper.
The mm-hmm. Last Supper. Boy, you're on. See, I got you today. You're sharp as a tack. So the Last Supper, exactly. So when you talk about this thing symbolically, there's the wine and the food, the bread and the Last Supper and life and death all combined in this little wine story. And what's the wine story about? We get wine. I bought him a gift of wine these lovely bottles to celebrate his giving, helping me create life. And we finished the last bottle at the end of his wife's life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the beginning and the end
of really
life
something.
And the beginning and the end of the gift.
Yeah.
And it all followed. And life is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gift was symbolic of life.
Yeah.
So it's quite a story.
Very connected.
I never thought I'd create a story that sensitive and that deep, but it's a very, very religious, philosophic story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll end with that.
Yeah. No, that's a very, very powerful, definitely. Thank you so much for sharing this. And everything, lighting a candle to all these individuals who have been, you know, larger than life and have, you know, made an impression in your life. And
right.
You've been a part of their lives. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening. We are excited to announce that Lewis now has his own blog. Visit lewisrez.com to get insightful commentary to the Miami Memoirs podcasts, along with an analysis of current events, as only Lewis can provide.